Granthraj, Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 11, entitled The Childhood Pastimes of Krishna, Text 42. Translation and purport by Srimad Gracie S. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Translation: when the Supreme Personality of Godhead saw that the demon had assumed the form of a calf and entered among the groups of other cows, he pointed out to Baldev, "Here is another demon." Then he very slowly approached the demon as if he did not understand the demon's intentions. Purport: the import of the words Mugdha Iva is that although Krishna knows everything, here he pretended that he did not understand why the demon had entered among the cows, and he informed Baladev by a sign. Om Ajnanati Mirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshuron Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Nama Om Vishnupadaya Krishna Prishthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Tinamine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Desha Tarine Vancha Kalpataru Bhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna. I'm grateful to be here at the lotus feet of their lordships amongst all of you, and I seek the blessings of all the Vaishnavas so that I can speak something in the service of the Lord. So today we are discussing from the Srimad Bhagavatam's 10th canto, the childhood pastimes of Krishna. And Vatsarupinam, that here a demon, as will be described in the subsequent verses, has appeared in the form of a vatsa, a calf. And Krishna is approaching the approaching this calf, and is pointing out to Baladev. So one of the fundamental teachings of spirituality, whatever be the tradition we are in, is that things are not what they appear to be. That appearances are deceptive. The very word maya, it means that which is not. Maya, this is what it appears to be. Ma, it is not like that. Now, in psychology, there are different terms used to refer to specific kinds of misconceptions that we may have. There is illusion and there is hallucination. So, hallucination is when there is no object at all and there is some perception. So, you know, I feel as if there is someone and actually there is no one over there. That's a hallucination. Illusion, it can be a category name to describe various kinds of misconceptions. But specifically, illusion refers to that there is an object, but it is perceived falsely. So the standard example our acharyas give for this is, if there's a rope lying in a dark room, and we mistake it to be a snake. So there is an object, and there is a perception. And it is the object that has caused the perception. But there is not correspondence between the object and the perception. There is a distortion between them that has happened in the process. So now, when we see, so there is object, there is the rope, there is a perception, there is a, oh, there's a snake over here. So where did things go wrong? The object, it is the object that caused the perception. And if the object caused the perception, then why was the perception wrong? Where does the error lie? Does the error lie in the object, or does it lie in the subject, or does it lie in the medium between the object and the subject? So, this is actually a subject of elaborate discussion in the Upanishads. What exactly is Maya? Now, where does Maya lie? And how does it act on us? So, when we discuss these subjects, so basically, let's look at, whenever there is consciousness, or whenever there is any perception, there are three factors involved. There is the object, there is the subject, and there is the stream of consciousness, which flows from the object to the subject. So, there's the rope. From the rope, the stream of consciousness flows. Basically, from the subject, actually, the consciousness flows towards the object. And then it returns. That's how we perceive. So, now, where exactly is the illusion? Is it in the object? Is it in the medium? Or is it in the subject? The impersonalist idea, specifically the Mayavadi idea, the monistic idea, is that actually both the object and the subject are illusion. They say that the only thing that really exists is the medium. Their idea of pure consciousness is consciousness alone exists. And there is no object and there is no subject. So the unfiltered stream of consciousness alone is what is the reality, they say. And that there is an object out there is an illusion. That object will give me pleasure, that is a bigger illusion. That object will cause me danger, that's also a bigger illusion. But the very fact that I am an agent of consciousness, that I am radiating out consciousness, that also is an illusion. That is their conception. So only the stream of consciousness exists as an all-pervading reality, which they call as Brahman. Now, this notion has appeal to it, but it also has serious problems. The appeal is that it seems to be very non-sectarian, undifferentiated, universal. All that exists is a stream of consciousness. And when we talk about the concept of a stream of consciousness as the only reality, there is no sectarianism associated with it. That's what people think. As soon as there's the idea there is a God, then say there is your God and my God, and my God is better than your God, and we'll fight. But if there is only just a stream of consciousness that exists, then there's no difference. So actually, the Bhagavatam itself is having a very profound worldview. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu put it in the words of Achintya Bheda Bhed. And I'll come to that in either this or the future class. But at this point, now there are these monists who say there's an evolution in your conception of God. They say first, people think there is no God. That is atheism. Then they think that there are many gods. Then they move forward and they think there is one God. So there is atheism, polytheism, monotheism. It's one God. And then the next realization is there is only God. There is only God. Now the Bhagavad Gita agrees with this. Vasudeva sarvamiti. There is only God that exists. But what that means, in that there is a substantial differentiation between how the Vaishnavas understand it, how the Bhaktas understand it, and how the impersonalists understand it. So, the idea that there is only God, what that means in the impersonalist conception is that there is only the stream of consciousness. And the subject and the object, they are all illusion. So that is how the conception of only God exists. But the Vaishnava understanding is, as explained in the Bhagavatam, that actually the subject, the object and the medium, they are all manifestations of God because they are all His energies. And the Bhagavatam in the Chatushloki defines what is actually illusion. It says, Rite artham yat pratiyet na pratiyet chatmani. Tam vidyad atmano maya yatha bhaso yatha tamaha. That to see anything as separate from God, to see anything meaningful as separated from God, from the absolute truth, that is maya. So that means, maya, is it just a matter of perception? That if I see something connected with Krishna, then there is no maya. If I don't see something connected with Krishna, then there is maya. So yes, that is one level of understanding. Now the important thing is that the Bhagavatam, Sarvam, as the Upanishad says, Sarvam Kalmamidam Brahma, everything is Brahma. Yes, everything is Brahma, but what is the nature of that Brahma? Vadanti tat tattva vidas tattvam yad jnanam advayam, Brahmeti paramatmeti bhagwaniti shabdyate. That one absolute truth, Jiva Goswami explains in the Sandarvas, tattvam yad jnanam advayam, that is tattva, that is the absolute truth. This is 1 to 11 in the Bhagavatam. Jnanam advayam is non-differentiated. But that same one absolute truth, which the impersonalists call as Advaya Jnana, so their idea of Advaya, Dvaya is duality, Jnana is knowledge. So Advaya Jnana means the knowledge which goes beyond duality. So the Advaya Jnana Tattva that is there, the Bhagavad accepts that there is Advaya Jnana Tattva, but Advaya Jnana Tattva manifests at multiple levels. It's Brahmeti Paramatmeti Bhagavaniti Shabdyate. So the Advaya Jnana Tattva is not just as the stream of consciousness. The Advaya Jnana Tattva exists also as Paramatma. The Advaya Jnana Tattva exists also as Bhagavan. And in this way, that same one absolute truth manifests in different ways. And the whole absolute truth actually, the absolute truth is all that exists. We also exist as parts of that absolute truth. Mamai vamsho jiva loke jiva bhuta. Krishna says, we are his parts. Amsha. So, yes, that God is all that exists. That is a fundamental teaching of the Upanishads. And the Bhagavatam accepts that. But the Bhagavatam nuances that teaching. It doesn't mean that ati exists, that no subject or no object exists. That is subject, object and the stream of consciousness. They are all God. At various levels of manifestation. So here, when I said that there is a subject, there is an object, and there is the stream of consciousness in between. Now, where exactly does illusion lie? Now, if the subject and object are not illusion, as the impersonalists, as the monists say, then where exactly is the illusion? Is the illusion in the object? Okay, certain objects, they are maya. But Krishna is quite clear in the Bhagavad Gita when he, in 3.36-43, he analyzes the enemy of selfish desire, which is referred to as kama. Kama can specifically refer to lust as the sexual attraction. Generically, it can refer to selfish desire that sabotages our spiritual growth, that makes us act against our best interests. So there, when Krishna is talking about the location of kama, where he doesn't say anywhere that the kama resides in the vishaya, that the kama resides in the sense objects. He says, indriyani mano buddhir asyadhishthanam ucchate etair vimoha yatyesha jnanamavritya dehinam. So he says in 3.14 in the Bhagavad Gita that this kama, where does it reside? Indriyani mano buddhir. The senses, the mind and the intelligence. Asya adhishthanam uchyate. This is where it is situated. Etair vimohayatyesha. By this, one gets deluded. Jnanam avritya dehinam. By covering the knowledge of the embodied soul. So Krishna is not saying that the illusion exists in the sense objects. The illusion exists in not the object of perception, it exists in the subject who is perceiving. Now somebody may say, but no, You know, when I see some attractive sense object, that's when I feel the desire for it. You know, if I see some delicious food item, I feel like eating it. If I see some object that is advertised, I get the desire to possess it. So clearly, it is the object that is causing the desire within me. So isn't it the object that the cause? Actually, the object is not the cause. The object is the trigger. The difference between the cause and the trigger is that the trigger triggers only when there is a particular mode of illusion present in the subject. So, for example, if a person has never drunk alcohol and has no interest and has no intention of drinking alcohol, and such a person passes by a bar, then they pass by a bar, they see the object. But that object does not trigger any desire in the person. Why is that? Somebody else who is an alcoholic or is a recovering alcoholic, when they pass by the bar, at that time they feel the desire. The same object, it triggers desire in one person, it doesn't trigger desire in another person. That means that the object is itself not the cause. Now when we use the word trigger, what trigger means is that when the trigger is pressed, the bullet will be shot. But when the trigger is pressed, the bullet will be shot only when the bullet is present in the gun. If there is no bullet in the gun, the trigger's pressing will have no effect. So like that, certain objects act as triggers of illusion for us. But those triggers trigger us only because the illusory desire is already there within us. The attachment is already there within us. So, indriyani mano buddhir. This is situated in the senses, mind and intelligence. And only when the desire is situated in the mind and in one of these places, senses, mind and intelligence, that's when we are prone to illusion. If the selfish desire, karma, was not present, then even the presence of the trigger would not trigger desire within us. And so the object is not the source of the illusion. The object is not the cause of the illusion. Although the object may be the trigger for the illusion. Now, in the process of perception, now Krishna, it's interesting, in the same third chapter of the Gita, he uses the word jnani repeatedly. In the same verse which I quoted, avratna, he says that indriyani manobuddhir asya adhishtanam uchate etair vimohayatyesha jnanam avritya dehinam. Jnana, knowledge. That the soul originally has knowledge. Avritam jnaname tena jnanino nityavairena kamarupena kaunteya dushpurena analena cha. So this is jnana. Avritam jnaname tena. That jnanino nityavairena. Krishna says the soul is jnani. Here Krishna is not using the word jnani in the sense of the seeker on the path of jnana yoga. He's using the word jnani in a generic sense to refer to one who possesses knowledge. The soul, by its very nature, is capable of enlightened perception. That is the nature of the soul, jnani, no. But then, the soul undergoes sometimes an illusory perception. And when this happens, so the soul is capable of enlightened perception, but the soul has an illusory perception. So it pursues wrongly. And that wrong perception is caused by the contamination that is there surrounding the soul. The soul, when we say the soul is an illusion, what does it mean? Like I say, a person is in water. That means the water is surrounding that person. So like that, the soul is surrounded by the subtle body and the gross body. And it is the subtle body that is where illusion is present. Now, here, I'm giving this as a background to discuss the significance of Mugdha Iva. How does the Lord appear to be illusioned? So when the Lord appears to be illusioned, that is very different from how we are put into illusion. So none of the forces that put us into illusion actually act on him. But before I move on to the Lord, one more point here, that when we talk about illusion, say for example greed or lust or anger, you know, is that just a feeling within us, or is that a thing within us? No. Is, say, greed just a feeling within me? I'm feeling greedy now. Or is greed something within me that induces that feeling? Actually, it is both. It is both in the sense that Krishna, when he talks about kama in the Bhagavad Gita, he refers to it as a concrete object which exists. This kama resides in the indriya, mana and buddhi. So that means it's an object. And it's an object, it's a thing that exists, and that thing kindles a particular desire within us. So to give an example for this, say, if I have a computer, and then sometimes some computers are taken over by, nowadays there's a big, right now there's a big threat of a ransomware. Now, many computers have been shut down by this ransomware which has caught and captured people's computers. Say, now if there is some bug in my computer, some virus, some software has come in my computer, and that malware is, it just takes, as soon as I log on to the internet, instead of the browser opening to my home page, it opens onto some other page. And that site is a dangerous site where further viruses will come in, further harmful software comes in. Now that particular contaminating software is there within me, is there on my computer. But when that software starts getting activated, at that time my browser starts going to a particular site. When it is going to that site, I still have the choice. I don't want to go here. How is it going here? Close it. I can close it off. But if I am not vigilant, then that browser will go to that site, and when it goes to that site, then further contamination of the computer will happen. That means, in the computer, when a computer is contaminated in this particular way, of a software taking it off to a particular site, then there is the code that is present on my computer. And that code pushes my computer's browser to go to a particular site. So, if I have to deal with it, if I have to prevent my computer from getting further contaminated, there are two things I have to do. First is that if the computer browser is going to that harmful site, I just close it. No, I don't want to go here. Actually, I'll go there without my intention. Without my planning, it'll just go there automatically. I have to close it. No, I don't want to go there. And then after that, I have to shut down. After that, I have to find out that particular malware and delete it. So, both these. First is, in a sense, control. Control. Don't let the computer go to that site. And then clean. Clean up. So, similarly, in the Bhagavad Gita, when Krishna talks about the qualities of a Brahmana, he talks about Shama and Dama. Shama is control of the mind, and Dama is control of the senses. So what it means is, it is best if our mind is controlled. It is best if there are no contaminations in our mind only. It's like there is no malware on a computer, that's the best. But if there is malware on the computer, the site is going off to some undesirable, the browser is going off to some undesirable site, at least don't let it go there. That is Dhamma. If the mind gets agitated, at least don't let the agitation express itself at the physical level, at the sensual level. Yeah, I'm agitated, but I won't act on it. So for us, both Dhamma and Shama are important. And as long as we are not pure, as long as the contaminations are there, we will need Dhamma. The malware will just take the computer off to an undesirable site like that. Even without our doing anything, our mind will just go off to some undesirable thoughts. So we need Dhamma. If it's going there, bring it back. Going it there, bring it back. Yato yato nishchalati manaschanchalam asthiram tatastato niyam yaitad atmanyeva vasham nayet. Krishna says in 6.26 in the Bhagavad Gita, wherever and whenever the mind wanders, bring it back under the control of the self. That means we have to be aware. Oh, where is my browser going? Oh, I don't want to go here. Oh, where is my mind going? I don't want it to go there. But then over a period of time, when we keep doing this, Krishna says in the next verse, Yunjanevam sadatmanam yogi vigata kalmashaha sukhena brahma samsparsham atyantam sukham ashnute. So he says, Yunjan evam sadatmanam. And in this way, the devotee, the yogi keeps practicing yoga consistently. Yogi vigata kalmashaha. The contamination goes away from the consciousness. Sukhena brahma samsparsham. Then there is contact with Brahma, contact with spiritual reality. Atyantam sukham ashnute. One starts experiencing the ultimate happiness. So there is this process. There has to be control and there has to be cleansing. So we can't expect the cleansing to happen overnight. The cleansing is going to take time. Sometimes it may take a lifetime. And during that lifetime, when the cleansing is happening, then it's control that is needed. So the soul in this world is mugdha. And what is it that makes the soul mugdha? That is maya. So maya, there is, the word maya can be understood etymologically in terms of language and its meaning, maya. It is a false perception, that which is not. Maya, in terms of effect, is our misreading of the situation. Our thinking that objects are what they are not. And there is also maya as an agency. Maya is a person. The Bhagavatam tells that maya Vaishnavi Janamohini. While describing maya, the Bhagavatam says that is actually Vaishnavi. She is actually a devotee. Is Vaishnavi. She is a devotee. Maya is not against us. The purpose of maya is not to defeat us. The purpose of maya is not to thwart us. It is to test us. Thwart means that you just want to be defeated. Oh no, you cannot do this. You cannot do that. Yes, if you are trying to do it, I'll stop you. I'll mislead you. The purpose of maya is not to thwart us. It is to test us. Test us means that Srila Prabhupada was once in New Vrindavan and he was giving the Bhagavad Dharma lectures, which later came as the book Dharma, the Way of Way to Transcendence. And in one of his classes there, he was asked by a devotee, Prabhupada, if our purpose is to serve Krishna, then why is maya so strong? And Prabhupada immediately replied, Because your purpose is not strong. So, maya is not here to stop us from going towards Krishna. Maya is here simply to test whether we want Krishna more than the things of this world. Pure devotees are those who want only Krishna. So, pure devotees are those who only want only Krishna. Now, very few of us are pure devotees. At least I am far from a pure devotee. But potential pure devotees are those who want Krishna more than anything else in this world. Now, the contaminations are there in our heart. And we can't wish the contaminations away. There is lust, there is greed, there is envy. These are there. But we don't entertain them. They may create certain desires within us, but we don't let those desires grow. We want Krishna more than the things of this world. When that happens, then we move forward steadily onwards towards Krishna. No matter whatever temptations come on the way, they tempt us. But there is temptation and there is intention. Temptation is what comes from outside. Intention is what comes from inside. Now, what links the temptation to intention is perception. Temptation comes from outside. When will the temptation create an intention from inside? When there is perception. When I perceive that this is a source of pleasure and that this is a source of greater pleasure than anything else. At that moment we think, this is a source of greater pleasure even in Krishna. And this is what I want. Right? So the temptation creates intention when there is false perception. But if our intention is very strong, I want to serve Krishna, then we won't dwell so much in that temptation. When we don't dwell so much in the temptation cannot pervert our intention. So that's why the more we hear regularly, the more by hearing about Krishna, by associating with devotees of Krishna, our devotional intention becomes strong. And to the extent our devotional intention is strong, then other perceptions which may come in the course of our life, then they won't sabotage us. They won't distract us. Say, if say if I am coming to the temple, I am driving by and I am coming to the temple, and if I am eager to come to the temple, you know, oh, there is a program here, I want to take darshan of the deities, I want to attend the program. If I am eager, then I just straight come to the program. But if I am myself half-hearted, you know, yeah, it's good to go to the temple, but then I look around and I see along the way, there's a movie theater. Hey, this looks like a nice movie. Or along the way, there is a sports stadium. Hey, there's a cricket match going on over here. So, if my intention is not strong, then whatever temptation comes on the way, that temptation will cause distraction. Now, this is very graphic. You know, somebody is going to one place and suddenly they end up at another place. That can also happen at times. But internally, this is what happens to us. If our intention to come towards Krishna is strong, then the temptations will be present, but they won't distract us. But if somebody is going on a sightseeing tour and they're thinking, yeah, you know, maybe I can go to the temple, maybe I can go here, maybe I can go there, then we will be caught. You know, if we are casual, we'll become casualties. If we are casual in our devotion, then our devotion will become a casualty. Because there'll be so many desires that come up, and those desires will not be able to resist them. So now in the case of Krishna, this Mugdha Iva is remarkable. Because Krishna, there is the illusion that is primarily in the subject. One who is perceiving, they have contaminations because of which illusion happens. And in Krishna, there are no such contaminations. So therefore, Krishna cannot be put under illusion. Now, if the contaminations are already inside us, then what is the role of Maya? Maya Devi, what does she exactly do? Maya Devi, she basically provides us options. She provides us, you know, why don't you try this? Why don't you try that? Why don't you try that? She provides us options. And it is for us to choose among those options. Now, I once asked a question that, you know, if God wants us to do good things, then why are there so many bad options in the world? Isn't it? The good options are so few and the bad options are so many. So I explain, that's how it always is in any multiple choice exam. Isn't it? Any multiple choice exam, the bad options are always more than the good option. Now, if the choice were dependent only on a probability. Out of 5 options, 4 are wrong. The probability of the student choosing the right option is 20%. That means fail. But the choice is not dependent on probability. The choice is dependent on education. So the student who has studied well will be able to make the right choice. The wrong choices that are there in a multiple choice exam are not to thwart the student. They are not to mislead the student. They have to test the student. Which choice does they want? Does that particular student want to make? So Maya Devi, she provides these multiple choices for us. She's like the examiner. She provides the multiple choices for us, and it is for us to choose. And If we are fixed in our intention towards Krishna, then the dhammi buddhi yogam tam yena mam upayantite. Krishna will give us the intelligence by which we can make the right choices. And we will move straight towards Krishna. So in the case of Krishna, this mukda iva does not apply because first of all, there is no contamination within him. And secondly, he is not a student to be tested by Maya. Mama Maya Durataya. He is above Maya. He is transcendental. Because he is transcendental, so he can never come under illusion. So when Krishna, it appears as if he's undecided. It's as if he doesn't know who is who, what is happening. That is simply a part of his Leela. Leela is, there is Maya and there is Leela. So in both, there is a sense of unreality. But that unreality, Maya is the unreality which takes us deeper into illusion. Whereas Leela also has a sense of unreality in it. I'll talk more about Leela in a later class, maybe tomorrow or one of the later classes. But Leela is that which takes us deeper into reality, deeper into connection with the supreme reality. So in that sense, Maya and Leela are opposite in their effect. Although there is some kind of illusion where even the Vrajvasis don't know that Krishna is God. And Krishna doesn't always act as God. Krishna is God. Then the Vrajvasis is not acting like that. That is some kind of illusion, but that is a divine illusion. And that takes them closer to Krishna. So Leela is the kind of illusion that takes people closer to Krishna. Maya is the illusion that takes people away from Krishna. And here, what we are seeing in the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam is Leela. So, the process of bhakti is for transferring us from Maya to Leela. From this material world to the spiritual world. And to the extent we consistently keep practicing bhakti, striving by the association of devotees, by the practice of sadhana bhakti, to make Krishna our strongest desire. Then, gradually, we'll become purified and we will come out of the scope of illusion. Not only will we have to, right now we have to struggle to make the right choices even when the wrong choices allure us. But as we become purified, there'll be cleansing. And once the cleansing happens, the right choices will become natural for us. And then, as the right choices become natural, bhakti becomes much more easier. Bhakti becomes much more joyful. So, sukham kartum avyayam. That is the Bhagavad Gita says in 9.2. That becomes our experience. We start relishing the process of bhakti when the distractions from bhakti stop pulling us away from Krishna. When we can focus on Krishna, become absorbed in Krishna and relish His sweetness. So, I'll summarize what I spoke today. I spoke about how in this world, the fundamental teaching of all spiritual traditions is that things are not as they are. There is counterfactual perception that is happening. And the nature of that counterfactual perception, that is where the Vaishnavas and the monists differ. So when a hallucination means there's no object, but there's perception, which is wrong. Illusion means that there is object, but it is wrongly perceived. Now, like to perceive a rope to be a snake. Now, in any perception, there is object, there is subject and stream of consciousness. The impersonalists hold that it is a stream of consciousness itself that is the reality. Object and subject are both illusions. And they hold that there is only God that exists. The Vaishnavas agree that there is only God that exists. But God is not just the stream of consciousness. God, as the absolute person, is the supreme subject of consciousness. And all the other entities in existence, they are also energies of God. So that is, now, then what is illusion? Illusion is not something which exists in the object. The same object can cause illusion within one person, not illusion in another person. That's why the object is not the source of the illusion. Krishna says it is in the person itself, and in their mind, senses, mind, intelligence, that the contamination is situated. And the object is not the cause, the object is the trigger. Just like when a person gets wounded, the trigger pressing is not the cause of the wound. It is the bullet that is present in the gun that is the cause of the wound. Similarly, the object is not what causes us to fall down. It is the desire within us, the bullet that is there within us, that causes us to fall down. And then I discussed about how the process of So is selfish desire like karma, is it just a feeling or is it a thing? It is both a thing which induces a feeling. Just like when some malware captures our computer, then it is the code is physically is present in our computer. But then it makes us do certain things, like visit certain sites which are harmful. So then the way to deal with this, control and cleansing. If the browser goes off to that site, stop it, close it. You have to close it repeatedly and then gradually find an antivirus software which you can cleanse that malware. Like that, for us, selfish desires are there in our consciousness and they impel our consciousness, this object, this way, that way. So whenever that happens, we cleanse it. That is dhamma. We control it. That is dhamma. Now we pull the senses back from whenever they go towards the object. And then there is shama. That is, we make the mind peaceful. We purify ourselves. So, when there is illusion, it is primarily because of what is present within us, the contamination. And Maya is the illusory energy, is also a devotee of Krishna. And she tempts us, her purpose is not to tempt or thwart us, it is to test us. And she tests us by giving us multiple options. It is only when our intention to serve Krishna is weak, that her temptations will change our intentions. And we will succumb. So, like a person wanting to come to the temple, but going off to watch a movie. And Prabhupada said, it is because your purpose is not strong, that Maya appears strong. And by associating with devotees, we strengthen our spiritual intentions. And as that intention becomes stronger and stronger, then the struggle becomes lesser and lesser. And once the contaminating software, the anarthas go away from our consciousness, then bhakti becomes joyful. And thus we move from the illusion in this world, which is Maya, which keeps us, it takes us away from Krishna, to the illusion in the spiritual world, which is Leela, which takes us into deeper connection with Krishna. Krishna, when he appears to be an illusion, there are no contaminations within him. There is no Maya who is testing him. He is above Maya, he is a master. So the if at all he seems to be perceiving things wrongly sometimes, it's purely Leela. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.